Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, it's so hard to say goodbye to tomorrow. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
So guys, this is it. This is our final episode of the audio podcast format for Forward Thinking. And this was not something that we were pushing for. It's something that kind of happened. The video series is going to continue on. We really appreciate all you fans out there who have been sending us messages all this time. And we didn't want to just leave with like an episode and then have nothing happen. So this is kind of our goodbye episode. We wanted to spend a little time thinking about some of the topics that we talked about in the past and kind of just going over a little bit of stuff about the episodes we've done so far. Before we even get started, I want to play this tiny clip from the very first episode of Forward Thinking's audio podcast called Forward Momentum. Welcome to Forward Thinking. This is how we introduced ourselves in that very first episode. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the very first episode of Forward Thinking. I am your host, Jonathan Strickland, and I am joined by two phenomenal people, two of my favorite people in the whole wide world, and I'm going to have the first one introduce herself to you right now.
Hey, I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. I am the co-host of another technology podcast called Tech Stuff.
Hi, I'm Joe McCormick, and I'm a writer for the Forward Thinking video series.
Excellent. And so this audio podcast...
Okay, so we livened up a bit since then.
Did we?
Yeah.
Was I very reserved?
You were a little reserved. But, I mean, Joe had just started podcasting when he joined, and we started doing the Forward Thinking audio podcast, and now you're a pro. So.
Yeah, yeah. That was your first time podcasting ever for that first episode, was it?
Yes, it was.
Wow.
So I thought we could touch a little bit on some of the topics that we've covered, talk about some of our favorites, and just some other like behind-the-scenes type stuff in a very short kind of farewell to the fans episode. Now, we've recently done episodes where we talked about 3D printers again and driverless cars. We talked about that in an episode like two back. So I don't want to even touch on those because we've already just covered them. But the very first topic we covered on Forward Thinking was the Internet of Things, which is no big surprise. It's a huge topic, very buzzy.
It was especially buzzy right that very moment.
Yes, it's still buzzing right now, but it was one of those things where the topic was just starting to get some momentum in the public consciousness, although I think there are still a lot of people who don't know what the Internet of Things means. But recent stories have, you know, been continuing to develop around the Internet of Things, the basic idea being that you have all these different devices that can connect to the Internet and share information in some way or enact change in your environment in some way.
Uh-huh.
But one of the stories I wanted to mention is that apparently that also means creating lots more security vulnerabilities.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you got a ton of stuff connected to the Internet.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And not all of it is as protected as your notebook or even your less protected items.
Smartphone.
Also, people are still terrible at passwords.
Right. So one problem is that you got a lot of Internet of Things devices that don't have any password protection at all. Another problem is that some of them have hard-coded passwords, meaning that if you get access to what a company uses as the hard code password for that particular product, it's open season. And then a lot of people just never bother changing the standard password that comes like with a router. For example, I got a new router, and so I went in and changed the password because the default password was password.
Do you remember when we did the story about the baby monitors that were being taken over by hackers from all over the world to watch in on other people's babies and talk to them and like yell at them and tell them to start crying?
Yep. That's not cool.
But I think that was because of unchanged default passwords.
Yeah. It exactly was.
Wasn't there a story about like utility centers, like river dams or something like that, having software in them that had unchanged passwords?
There were stories of
they were using baby monitors to control the dams.
Oh.
There were stories of code found in some of those systems where it was clear that foreign agents had managed to infiltrate the systems of various important utility companies across the United States and put in code that was not meant to be there through whatever, I mean, who knows how it got there. It could have gotten there by a thumb drive or, you know, anything. But The reason why I bring up Internet of Things in particular is that recently there was a story that I saw in TechDirt about a security researcher named Brian Krebs, who was the target of a directed denial of service attack, a DDoS attack, where apparently he was being hit by 620 gigabits per second of traffic to the website that he has.
That's a lot of gigabits, huh?
Gigabits, yeah. When a Google Fiber connection is 1 gigabit per second, and that's way faster than anything I have, 620 is massive. And they suspect that a lot of this traffic came from Internet of Things devices like digital video recorders and routers.
This means that the hacker who was perpetrating the attack had captured lots of devices out in the wild.
Essentially.
And made them work for him or her.
Yeah.
Like Pokemon.
Yeah, very much
okay.
So. There are other issues with Internet of Things, like the concept of privacy. We've talked about this before, the idea that if you have an environment that's going to react to you and change according to your preferences, it has to know about you in order to do that, which means you give up some of your privacy. Even if it's not your name or any other kind of demographic information about you, it starts to learn your preferences, which alone is a very valuable database of information for lots of different companies. And as it turns out, just if you want an Internet of Things that is customizable and personalized, then you
have to
give up privacy.
It has to know about your person.
Yeah. So that's a growing concern. All that being said, I still think the Internet of Things concept is really cool. But, we need to be really aware of how we develop and implement that technology in order to do it responsibly. Some of the other cool things we talked about in those early episodes. So I was going back through and I was looking at all the different titles and stuff.
Uh-huh.
I was reminded that how much I loved the episodes we did about time.
Oh, that was fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Talking about how time is dependent upon your context, right? Your frame of reference.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're traveling super fast and someone else is not traveling super fast, from your perspective, traveling super fast, it looks like their life is just whooshing by. And from their perspective, it would look like you are barely moving at all within the frame of whatever vehicle you're going super fast in.
Yeah, that episode gave me a headache, I remember.
Yeah. Because it was all like, time is relative, literally relative to your frame of reference. That's why we say that.
Though I know some people take that to mean that time does not exist, to which I disagree.
Yeah, I saw a recent article about people suggesting that time was merely a construct in our minds. It was essentially our brain's way of making sense of things. And that time's arrow doesn't point in one direction, because if you start looking at massive calculations on the galactic scale, they are reversible, whether time travels in one direction or the other. So it may just be that at our very tiny local level, we have to have time going in a specific way or else things don't make sense. I'm like, what? But what?
I think time definitely Agreed. Does exist, but it's possible that the present does not exist.
I get presents all the time.
Aww.
We also talked about some pop culture stuff. Two of my favorite episodes we've ever done.
Yeah, those Back to the Future Part 2, Parts 1 and 2.
Yes, my favorite was Back to the Future 2, Part 2. That was my favorite title ever.
Those were some great episodes.
Yeah, that's where we learned that everyone will have a fax machine in every room of their house.
Yes, many people will be Michael J. Fox.
Did we rate that true? I think we said that was a good one, right?
It might have been. It's been a long time.
What's the pizza disc where they stick a little pizza disc?
Yeah,
in
you really
the,
know how to hydrate a pizza.
Yeah.
And half of the pizza had bell peppers on it, and I was like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite episodes we ever did was the one about the future of talking, the future of speech. Maybe not the future of talking. That's not how Sho would put it. Language, the languages that we speak, because languages change over time. They evolve over time, just like organisms do, but on much shorter time scales and in very interesting ways. One of my favorite classes I took in college was the history of the English language, learning about how English has changed since, you know, the year 800.
And it has changed dramatically since then.
It very much, an English speaker today without a lot of training could not read Old English, Anglo-Saxon language.
You would need to have – you would sit there and say, like, I'm pretty sure this is German.
Yeah.
And we also got to read a bunch of different bits of language from 100 years in the past each time, like 70 years in the past, something like that. We jumped back and back and back until
I did Old English, Thought Was Skuth Kinnick.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun.
What?
Yeah, yeah.
It's my favorite hailing.
And I did the Juan de Tapiro with the Shor Resulta for the Middle English. Yeah, yeah. This was,
Jonathan,
was a great episode.
What?
Okay, fair enough.
Okay. So we talked about how language changes over time, and we tried to think, okay, well, looking at how language has changed in the past, could we make predictions about the future? We made a few, but we weren't able to make all that many predictions about how English is going to change in the future because, I don't know, it's hard to predict things like this. But I went back to see if there'd been anything interesting published on this topic since our podcast came out.
Mm-hmm.
And son of a gun, one really interesting article I read was from The Economist, and it was published just about a month after our podcast came out.
This is the problem with the future. It keeps arriving.
And it would have been a great resource for us because it was really interesting. So it pointed out one thing about English that is going to be highly determinative of how it changes in the future, which is that about two-thirds of the people who speak English in the world are not native English speakers.
Mm-hmm.
More people speak English as a non-native language than as a native language.
Hmm.
And so it's possible that English is actually used more as a kind of lingua franca around the world than it is as somebody's default speaking language. And there's no real sign of this reversing. So what does this mean for the future of English? And the article pointed out that linguistics researchers they've sort of shown that bigger languages that, you know, incorporate more speakers tend to become simpler. As a language is spoken by more non-native adults, it's likely to lose unnecessary bits and rules, such as grammatical inflection. Jonathan, you know this from the history of English.
Sure.
English used to have different versions of the same word depending on what grammatical role that word played in English. And some languages are still like this.
Well, yeah. Like English used to have different words for you, as mm-hmm. in singular you, and you as in a group of people, you. In fact, if you get down to it, it had you, you two, and all of you guys.
Yeah.
Which we in the South still have because we have y'all.
And that's a totally different type
of distinction.
And my
favorite, which is all right. Y'all.
That's true. All y'all, which is way more people than just y'all.
Oh, man. I love all y'all.
Yeah.
Y'all is a good word. I think all English speakers should adopt y'all.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the example that is given in the article of the grammatical inflection
changing
would be who versus whom.
Right.
So it's the same word, but it changes based on whether you're using it as the subject or the object in a sentence.
Mm-hmm.
English used to have this kind of thing for all kinds of words.
That's true.
And most of these have already gone away, and whom is probably going to disappear as well. But we can expect similar types of streamlining of the rules of language. And a good way to figure this out is to listen to adults trying to learn to speak English.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever is tripping them up the most, say like verb tense aspect, which is where there are three different forms of the present tense.
Mm-hmm.
So like let's say, you know, you've got a saw. And you're sawing a board, so you say, I saw.
Mm-hmm.
You can also say, I am sawing.
Mm-hmm.
You can also say, I do saw. No matter what, you're sawing all in what is with all these different tense cases? This is stupid. We're probably going to lose stuff like that.
I'm okay with most of that.
Yeah. We can also expect dialects and pronunciation to continue to change, a la the northern cities shift in how we pronounce American vowels. That we mentioned that in our old episode. And another interesting thing they pointed out in this article is sort of EU-isms, which is how the meanings of words changing based on words in English being misused because similar sounding words mean something different in another language.
Ah, yes, yes.
So they give a great example of this. I'm just going to read a quote from the article, quote, for example, European Union bureaucrats are likely to use the English control to mean monitor or verify because contrôleur or contrôlérien have this meaning in French and German. Other examples are assist for attend and actual for current.
Yeah, control being used to mean monitor or verify could cause some real confusion right now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, because you use that in just the
– oh, yeah.
You know, you're talking about, like, let's say that you're talking about monitoring the behavior of a crowd. If you're talking about controlling the behavior of a crowd, that has a totally different meaning right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure it could lead to those kinds of confusions. But yeah, I don't know. That was really interesting to me. I don't know. Maybe this is more interesting to me than it is to other people, but
yeah,
I love trying to imagine just how the very words we speak will be different.
And we had so many episodes that kind of were spokes connected to this concept, right? We had the ones where we said, well, how do you create a language that people will be able to understand 10,000 years from now, right? How do you create ways of alerting people to your intent when you have no way of knowing how the language is going to evolve, change? Maybe even the language you're using is completely eradicated by mm-hmm. the time.
Right.
And you need that for certain things, like telling people, hey, this is where we stored all our nuclear waste. Don't go in here.
Exactly.
Don't touch it. Don't yeah. put it in your eyeballs.
Or it's going to be dangerous for longer than your language exists.
On right. your eye stalks, whatever you
exactly.
you have.
Well, on yeah. eye stalks, that's a great way of saying that we also had an episode about how would we talk to aliens.
Yeah.
We really did focus on language in quite a few episodes. And
possibly because we're all English majors.
I was about to make the same reference. Yes. The fact that we're English majors probably had something to do with that. But it is a really interesting thing to think about. I don't think we're ever going to get to the point where we only communicate in references and metaphor the way that Star Trek Next Generation episode everyone likes but is actually secretly terrible did.
Do you know I do not remember that one.
The Star Trek episode,
is that Picard, the one called Darmok?
Yes, Darmok. So Picard beams down to a planet.
Uh-huh.
He's down with an alien leader. They do not – the universal translator will not translate what the guy is saying. And the guy only speaks in
mime?
References to things that are relevant in his culture. So like if he wants to say
– I wanted it to be mime.
Right. Well, sadly, no.
Okay.
Or interpretive dance would have been
sure.
great too, but
go
neither
ahead.
Is true. So if he wanted to say, you and I need to work together in order to overcome this challenge, instead he would say like Darmok and Janad at Tanagra. That would be – because in his culture, that references a story of two people who used to be at cross purposes but who then worked together to overcome a third problem. That would be – but the issue I have there is that unless you have a language, you cannot build the stories that
sure.
you then use as reference to communicate your ideas.
Well, right. maybe they had a language and they forgot the language.
Just, and now – but how do you – that seems like a really inefficient way to teach people how to communicate when you're talking
it
to –
It really is.
Like talking to a baby. Like once they get to the point where they are beyond making the actual sounds, like, all right, now I got to teach you an entire sentence to mean this general –
story.
Idea
yeah.
that can be applied to anything that falls within that general idea.
I can imagine that maybe if all teaching of language is done with visual aids, like if they don't just have books that are just text, but everything is like captions accompanying images.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Sure. There was an interesting play by Johnny Drago that happened here in Atlanta that posited that in some not too distant future, our archaeologists would find scraps of what we know today as human language and call it proto-emoji.
I both love it and hate it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic.
Jonathan, what's your favorite emoji?
I mean, poop. It's always going to be the answer.
I'm a big fan of the alligator. I don't know why. Sometimes I just send my wife an alligator.
I very rarely. I mean, the closest I use are still emoticons. I don't tend to use a lot of emojis. Some of the chat stuff will automatically translate an emoticon into an emoji.
I always get so mad about that.
Yeah.
I'm like, if I wanted an emoji, I would have put it in there myself.
I just wanted a colon and a closed parentheses. I didn't want it to
right?
be like this weird, gaping, smiling thing. But I'm old, so.
Okay, I've got another favorite episode.
You don't want to tell us about your favorite emoji? Oh, you did. Alligator.
I like alligator, and I like the devil. There's a devil one.
I like the cat, not the cat face.
I knew
but
it was going to come
kind
out
of
or later.
Disdainful cat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, I don't, like, cat like, frowning upon you.
Yeah, I don't know how a cat that's like less than a centimeter manages to still look disdainful. It's like a cat superpower.
I'm pretty sure disdainful cat and devil are
you
synonymous.
You suck at petting.
Yeah. All right. What any other favorite episodes you want to cover?
Yeah, there was one I remembered that I had a lot of fun thinking about, and it was the one about what happens when a robot breaks the law, mm-hmm. where we were covering a couple of stories about computer programs that had had done something autonomously that required the attention of law enforcement. Now, it's not any big problem to imagine what should be done when a robot does a – essentially performs a directed action that it was programmed to do
right.
and then it breaks the law.
Right. Then you would argue whomever programmed the robot would be at fault.
Yeah. But what about when robots or computer programs autonomously do something that has harmful legal repercussions but nobody directly told it to do that? It's just emergent behavior.
Sure.
And so I really remember thinking that was a very interesting problem to think about. Like, what it makes you consider: what is the nature of legal and moral responsibility?
Mm-hmm.
Who really should bear it? And then also, I know that you guys did an episode without me about robot personhood, which I think sort of revisited this topic, didn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It wasn't on purpose. We wanted you to be there. You just weren't there for whatever personal reason you had for not being there that day. We weren't let us exclude Joe from this episode.
I think that's when I was out of town for something.
Yeah. I would imagine so. But the episode was called "Are Robots Electronic Persons?" It was from July of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And we did it because the European Parliament had released a proposal for civil laws that relate to robotics, very much so talked about section of this proposal discussed possibilities for robot personhood.
Right. Essentially, this was a committee that said, we got together to think about these things that we've been saying we should think about for quite some time, and here's what we concluded. And they had some suggestions, but nothing that was definitive, right? It wasn't like this was going to be enacted into law.
Yeah, it was more like we really should have a committee that's thinking about this thing that can create something that can be enacted into law.
Right. Here are some basic ideas that we could head toward, but we're not suggesting this is the end goal. Rather, these are the sort of things that these dedicated committees should talk about.
It was a meeting calling for more meetings.
Yeah. But they were also being more specific.
Kind of meeting.
They were also calling for people who were experts not just in the technology but also in social law, things that would be important to make sure they could roll out also throughout the entire European Union. And not they didn't want to see a future where various countries were taking their own approaches to this and creating an incompatible system within the European Union. So it was actually a very forward-thinking proposal. There were segments in it that did kind of lend themselves to at least some simple jokes about the idea of robots, like robots getting paid a salary, for example. But the whole purpose of that was not to pay a robot so that the robot is motivated to do a good job, but rather to have a fund so that if that robot ever were to do something that would cause harm or damage, then money from that fund could go toward compensating the injured party. That sort of idea.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really an interesting thing to look into. I really enjoyed that episode, both of those episodes.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of my favorite ones over the years have of course been the medical ones. That's kind of one of my beats. Like I'm so excited whenever we get to talk about things like vaccines or pain or blood or bacteria.
I was not in a few of these. I know that because I listened to so many in preparation for this episode.
So those have been some of my favorites. And of course, medical technology is advancing all the time.
Sure.
I honestly didn't check to see what exactly we said about things in all of those episodes. I just wanted to be like, oh man, wasn't it great when we talked about the future of blood?
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Blood was fun. I think blood, the blood was the one that I think we released it with a technical error where my microphone was turned off.
And
they were hearing me through y'all's microphones, and then we had to re-release it.
Yeah.
That sometimes happens.
Yeah, sure. Technical difficulties do in fact occur, although for very much the most part, Mr. Noel Brown and Mr. Dylan Fagan do excellent work.
Yeah.
He is waving at us right now. Another one, as I was scrolling through our archive, was the one about search results and swaying elections
from August
of 2015.
Yeah, I like that one too.
Because that was one that I love it when I'm completely flabbergasted by things that I learn here around the HowStuffWorks offices.
Yeah.
And that was one that I had no idea about. And it was so surprising to me. The concept is that we all rely on Google so much and so trustfully that that the first – what is it, 4 search results? Or, I mean, depending on the size of your screen, I suppose, that show up in your immediate field of vision are basically what what opinion you draw about something that you don't know about.
Right. You don't, very few people go beyond even what is above the fold.
Right.
If they do scroll down, they, even fewer will go to page two, for example, of results. And to go beyond that is essentially unheard of. So, if you are able to position your results so that they appear in those first couple of links, you are in really good position to have people check your stuff out. So, if you have,
and to believe it, to believe that because it is that high in the Google search rankings, that it is a worthwhile news source.
Yeah, Google has built its reputation on having very reliable search results. So part of that then lends this idea that whatever links you see have inherent credibility to them.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, and this is a story that we've seen resurface as we lead up to the elections here in the United States. Just a couple of weeks ago, I saw a story where this same sort of idea was being brought up. In fact, I think at one of our pitch meetings for How Stuff Works, someone brought it up on a Monday editorial brainstorming. And when I heard that, I'm like, I'm pretty sure we covered that like a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess as the elections are coming up as of this recording, do actual research. Don't do Google research.
Yeah.
Is what it comes down to.
At this point, is anybody still forming their opinions of the candidates, though?
Well, the presidential candidates, maybe not, but local candidates.
Oh, yeah, good point.
There are many local candidates to be to take into consideration. I think a majority of Congress members are up for re-election this year. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe if y'all have some opinions about how things have been happening in this country, check that out. Yeah. Rock the vote.
Don't write my name in for anything. I don't need that level of responsibility.
Too late. I early voted. I wrote you in.
No.
For everything.
Luckily, not every state is allowed to do that, so I'm not going to become the governor of everywhere. I don't have that kind of time.
That would be real awkward.
Yeah. I can't split my time like that.
Other favorite episodes are, of course, the food episodes. And we've had some great episodes about food.
Yeah.
We had that really early couple of episodes about the future of protein. In which we mentioned that lab grown burger.
Yeah.
This was in 2013 and at the time carried a $325,000 price tag.
Yeah.
Which we all agreed was a bit steep a burger.
Yeah. Even for one grown in a lab, I think that'd be a bit dear for me.
Sure.
Cheapskates.
As just 3 years later, these things cost $11.36 to produce.
Phenomenal. Now you're talking about Atlanta high-end burger joint price ranges.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There are burgers sold in the building we're in right now that cost more than that.
Yes.
Yep, that's true. Right downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But so that was fascinating. The Borg chef, y'all.
including
our very, like, I think still our favorite moment in all of Forward Thinking when you guys looked up recipes that Chef
Watson never did cook
had
any
recommended.
Of those recipes. But
still can, just not on this audio
that's
show.
True. Snack stuff sometime?
Snack stuff, 2,000%. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
we can
man.
Make that, what was it?
I want a cooking show.
There was some
sure.
like dumpling that just sounded.
Yeah, mustard green dumplings.
That's what it was.
That actually, the filling for the dumplings was just pure olives.
It's going to be the saltiest food you've ever tasted.
The mustard greens were used to line the bamboo steamer when you steam
right.
them.
We talked about how often whatever the identified main ingredient was sometimes didn't appear in the dish or was listed as optional.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I love you, Chef Watson.
Yeah, that's
great. You're the very best chef ever. And then speaking of Star Trek, as I feel like we have a whole bunch over the past couple episodes here, Star Trek Economy.
Yeah.
From way back in December of 2014.
Yeah.
That was I think economic topics aren't the thing that I'm psyched about.
I think that was one of our most popular podcast episodes ever.
It was fun to talk about largely because first we got to address the fact that Star Trek has not been consistent with the way that it's treated its economy. Like essentially in Star Trek it says money doesn't exist unless the plot requires it to. But it was also just fun to talk about, well, would it be possible to get to a time when currency and wealth are no longer really a thing, or at least personal wealth isn't, maybe, you know, species wealth, the idea of having enough resources of energy and all the other needs to distribute to everybody so that there's no want or wanting of things, then maybe. But yeah, that was a fun one to talk about, really to kind of wrap your head around what would it take for us to get to that point. And it's mostly boils down to lots and lots of energy.
And jumpsuits.
Jumpsuits as well, yes. And
yeah.
The Picard maneuver, where you stand up and then you, you know, or you sit down and then you tug your...
your jumpsuit.
Also, the Riker maneuver, which involves sitting in chairs by swinging your leg over the back of the chair and then sitting down. And sometimes getting up the same way, but in reverse.
Amazing how often he does that.
Yeah, there's a
I've seen it.
Or rests a foot on the top of a chair.
Yes.
Like not on the seat of a chair, like on the top of the back.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I understand he's tall.
Right. Well, he needs it's a form of dominance. He's called number two, and he has to constantly prove himself to everybody else because he's not number one.
Yeah. Riker doesn't have to prove anything to you.
He had to grow a beard. That was from season one to season two, and it proved to me that he could grow facial hair.
He can. Very nice facial hair.
Yeah,
really.
Actually,
good job, Jonathan.
Much preferred him with the beard.
Yeah.
Me too. All
right. Also, one of the episodes that you were not here with us for, Jonathan.
Yeah.
Bees.
Oh, yeah, bees.
The future of bees.
Yep.
What was...
They're in my eyes.
I'm forgetting. Oh, man, I wish I had looked this
the
up.
Wicker Man.
I think I have the notes open. Maybe I can go check it out. There was some kind of terrible, wonderful word that we discovered.
We discovered a lot of things.
Maybe it was just robo bees.
Like, here's the
there were robo bees. There was some kind of B vitamin. There was like a thing they fed bees.
You mean vitamin B?
No. I mean some kind of like bee steroids to give them powers. Give them bee powers.
Man, yeah. I really missed out on that one.
No, that was Mega Bee.
Mega Bee?
It was called Mega Bee.
Mega Bee. What was Mega Bee? Was that the stuff?
Yeah, it was like a little bee protein shake.
Oh, nice.
Kinda. Yeah, aww. that you feed bees to help keep them through the winter.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. That and
oh, I remember we did a commercial for it, didn't we? It was Mega Bee, beef up your paws.
Nice. Well, I'm sad I missed all the bee activity.
I'm sad that you missed it too. Also, and this is a visual reference because I don't remember how good the actual episode was, but we did a spider episode.
Yes.
I think also were you there,
I was there for that
one? Oh, okay. But Joe added this amazing photograph into the notes, and let me explain it to you, and then I'm going to show it to the guys for visual reference. It's a kind of like a close up of this spider with like really pretty blue beady eyes, and it's like little mandibles, and so it's sort of like fisheye lens, like when you have like a dog that's like right up in a camera.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And the caption plastered across it is spiber, spiber, spiber. And this is what it looks like, dudes.
Yeah, that's what that is.
Did I make that image?
I didn't make it.
Oh, I might have.
And it brings me such joy. Occasionally, I just think about it and I giggle.
Rarely do we include images in our notes, but once in a while, that does happen. And it's typically for our benefit and not for yours. But one thing we have done for your benefit is, while most of the episodes have at least some combination of the three of us in them, we've also had some other folks on our show as well.
Oh, yeah. We should give them all a shout out.
Yep.
We've appreciated all of our wonderful co-hosts or our wonderful guests.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. We had Holly Fry come on and talk about the future of fashion.
Mm-hmm.
That one lovely time that Julie joined us for a couple episodes about weather control. Julie Douglas, that is.
Mm-hmm.
Raquel Willis talking about gender. Scott Benjamin and Benjamin Bolin. Talking about car computerization.
I think we should just call him Scott Benjamin Bolin.
Yes.
Christian Sager talking about superheroes.
Mm-hmm. Also about the ruins of the future.
Oh, yeah. And also Robert Lamb talking about monsters.
Yep.
The future of monsters, like what monsters will inhabit our future.
So thanks to all of them for lending their talent and expertise and making our show better and giving us the opportunity to talk about subjects that aren't necessarily within our own wheelhouses. But we have so much knowledge available here at How Stuff Works. It's actually pretty humbling.
It's intimidating as heck. Yeah, that's absolutely. A thing that, Jonathan, you have added to this show is ridiculously punny titles.
Punny titles and references. So I decided to just get a collection of some of the best of the worst or worst of the best or however you want to define it. And I haven't shared this with the with Joe and Lauren, although I'm sure you both were scrolling through the episodes and everything. Here are some of the titles that we have used in past episodes. I'm just going to go through them. We're not going to talk about necessarily what the subjects were, but there was My So-Called Life Casting. It's for that MTV generation out there. No More Waking Up in a Bathtub Full of Ice.
Artificial Organs.
Yep. Yep. Brother, Can You Spare a 01100100? Who Wants to Live Forever? Clearly
okay.
A reference.
Okay. Okay.
Shades of DeGray.
Oh, on the Aubrey DeGray episode.
Yep. It's coming right for us. That was another one. That was the autonomous car trolley problem episode.
Okay.
Oh, not about an asteroid?
Oh, no, you're right. That one was the asteroid one. Yeah. Then there's a 4D printing is 1D better.
All right.
Do Robots Write of Electric Sheep? Play That Funky Music, Android. Send In the Clones. That's the best one.
No.
Babies in Space. Inconceivable.
Oh, no.
And then there was also,
that was about conception in space.
And then there was
reproduction.
There was Babies in Space. That's heavy, which was about microgravity effects on babies.
Uh-huh.
Quick to the Zeppelin. I just think that's an awesome title. Pew Pew Laser. And then there's a That's So Random, parentheses, number generator in parentheses. Then Finding Nemo, that's N-E-E-M-O, which was about a nautical facility. There was Where We're Going, We Do Need Roads. Computers Know If You're Sarcastic. Pfft, yeah, right. Are Cryonics Cool?
Man.
And You Have 20 Seconds to Comply. So those are
that's
just
a RoboCop, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a RoboCop because we did one about Robo Security, and so that was the quote I used as or the reference I used as the title. And finally, let's kind of conclude this with a discussion about one of the most irritating things about this show that I introduced fairly early on: opening up episodes with song quotes.
Why do you say irritating?
Because whenever I wasn't here, you had to do it, and based upon the entries you guys made, I'm guessing it wasn't necessarily fun.
Oh no, it was. The thing is
well, we enjoy it when you do it.
Well, and we would always forget until we were literally right in the studio.
And that happened to me on a few occasions too, as will be apparent when I go through some of the stats. But first, I want to say that when we started the show, we didn't do that, right? That wasn't something that I just did from the very beginning, although it didn't take too long into the existence of the show before I introduced it. But I started by just introducing silly comments about the future in general, starting in the spring of 2013, and I would say things like, this is an actual quote, "Welcome to Forward Thinking, the show where we look at the future and say, come here, you."
That is kind of what we do, isn't it?
Yeah. There was another one where it's like, "How you doing?" That was we look at the future and say, "How you doing?"
We're not like Ray Bradbury who want to prevent the future from happening.
So, but the one I just referred to, the "Come here, you."
Ray!
That one came from Hollywood Ruined Holograms,
that
episode. But I hadn't started quoting songs yet. And when I did start quoting songs, I didn't go all in. Like another episode, I might just say something weird. I wouldn't necessarily quote a song, or I might quote a movie. It wasn't until later that I got into doing it frequently. But those early ones, like I was quoting some really wonderful pieces of music, like Rebecca Black's Friday or the Carly Rae Jepsen song Call Me Maybe. That was one. And I remember when I did that one, I started getting judged by you two. And that's, I think, what drove me into doing it more frequently because it was the trolling aspect.
We only have ourselves judgment? To blame.
In about half of the episodes early on, I'm like, that sound you're hearing is Lauren shaking her head at me. But I can tell, the first song lyric I ever referenced was "Put Me in a Wheelchair and Get Me to the Show," which is from the Ramones song "I Want to Be Sedated." I'm a big fan of punk rock in general, the Ramones in particular, and other stuff like rockabilly, surf rock, and garage rock. So, as well as glam and new wave, like a lot of those songs have representation if you look at the full list. That episode that I quoted that song in was "Building with Bacteria," which published May 15th, 2013. By the time we got to Shades of DeGray, I was quoting songs pretty much with every episode. There were a couple of exceptions, but there was a time in the summer, late summer of 2013, that I kind of stopped and I was doing other stuff, but then I came back to songs. So I decided to do something insane leading up to this episode. I did not get a chance to listen to every single entry. Or intro, rather. But I listened to 277 of them.
Oh my
Dang.
Goodness.
So
that is just a whole bunch.
Oh, buddy, are your ears hurting?
I did some. let me tell you this. I could stand to go the rest of my life without hearing Ben Boland say, "Welcome to Forward Thinking," because I heard it. I heard it 277 times. So here's some stats for you guys. First of all, we know which band I reference the most frequently.
They Might Be Giants.
That's exactly right. So out of those 277 song entries, which, by the way, that does not correspond to 277 episodes. There was one episode where I did three song quotes in a go. So that's a little different. Also, there's at least 20 or 30 that I didn't get to. But out of the 277 I listened to, I quoted a They Might Be Giants song 16 times. By far, by twice as much as the next leading artist. But I bet you won't guess who the second highest or the second most frequent artist would be.
Prince?
Not really. Prince actually is a little bit further down the list. Prince had 5 total.
Okay.
I know I did Prince at least twice.
Yeah, you did the same song twice. You did Purple Rain twice in a row. Oh. But The Beatles.
Oh,
with
okay.
8.
Yeah, sure.
And we both did Fixin' a Hole. We both quoted Fixin' a Hole, Joe. You and I. So that was one. And I'll talk more about some of the songs that were listed more than once in just a second. Talking Heads and Weird Al Yankovic were next at 7 songs each.
This is not my surprised face.
Yeah. Jonathan Coulton followed up with 6. to be fair, actually, I guess technically it's – no, it is 6 because I quoted him in that last episode last week and I went ahead and threw that one in. Prince would be 5, as well as Rocky Horror Picture Show songs were done 5
not
times.
Not shocked.
David Bowie, 5 times. Huey Lewis in the News, 5 times. And there's one artist that we did 4 times, and it was the same song every single time.
Goodness.
Styx, Mr. Roboto. So every time I did a Styx song, it ended up being Mr. Not necessarily the same line.
Did you just forget that you'd done it before?
Yeah, because I didn't. Oh, here's the thing.
This show's been going on a while.
The
huh?
reason why I had to listen to these is because I didn't keep a sheet of what I had used. I didn't have a list. So I had to go back and make a list because
sure.
I didn't have one. All I was doing was listening for a lyric that I wanted to try find something that was relevant to the topic, although that was not always the case.
And we've been doing this for 3.5 years,
yeah.
About 100 episodes a year.
Yeah. Yeah. So they add up pretty quickly. So here's a couple of other little stats and then we'll conclude and say goodbye to everybody about the songs. If you wanted to know what trend was the biggest in besides, you know, the individual artists that were done the most, musicals. I quoted more musicals than any other genre. So here are some of the musicals that you may have heard lyrics from. Rocky Horror and its sequel, Shock Treatment. Fame, Tommy, Mary Poppins, Les Miserables, West Side Story, Grease 2, Bye Bye Birdie, Oklahoma, A Chorus Line, Hair, Wizard of Oz, Cabaret, The Producers, Jungle Book, Sunday in the Park, Next to Normal, and I did Annie last week. So lots of musicals. Then if you want to talk, we also referenced some television show themes. Joe, on one of the episodes, you said the podcast that looks at the future and hums the theme to TV's Knight Rider. So I was like, that was possibly my favorite because it was the laziest and most awesome at the same time.
Oh, I forgot about that.
That was definitely a day that we were like, screw this lyric.
We did. I referenced the actual lyrics to the Star Trek theme twice.
Oh, my goodness.
Because there are lyrics to the Star Trek theme.
How about the lyrics to Yub Nub, the Ewok celebration song?
No, but we did reference Jedi Rocks.
Okay.
For the lightsaber episode we talked about, I did the alien language for the beginning of Jedi Rocks.
Lauren, how did you let it happen that we never did an episode without Jonathan that did Yub Nub?
I can't. I'm very disappointed
well,
in myself right now.
It's not canon anymore anyway. It's not in the end of Return of the Jedi anymore.
Oh, shut your mouth. Yub Nub is forever.
no one can take Yub Nub away from us.
Other TV show themes we mentioned or TV music that we mentioned. We mentioned Eep Op Ork Ah Ah, which came from the Jetsons. The Spider-Man theme song was referenced. The Mickey Mouse Club theme song was referenced. For songs that we use more than once, Mr. Roboto leads at 4. But at 3, we have I'm so ashamed of this one. Bad Case of Loving You by Robert Palmer.
Okay.
And we did that three times. I'm sorry.
That's one of my mom's favorite songs.
I didn't. Aww. We did a lot of medical stuff, and there's only so many songs that have doctor in them that aren't about prescribing drugs for the wrong reason or mistreating patients. I'm like, I don't want to go that route. Weird Science, also three times. Space Oddity, three times. Marvin, I Love You from Marvin the Paranoid Android, three times.
It's a very sweet wow. song.
It is a sweet song. Back in Time by Huey Lewis in the News, three times. Purple Rain, twice. Once in a Lifetime by Talking Heads was at least twice. Dr. Worm was twice from They Might Be Giants. And a lot of other ones. I mean, there were tons of songs from things like Monty Python. Frank Sinatra, we did Come Fly With Me twice, but we also did Fly Me to the Moon, but that was only once. So Sinatra had some representation. So anyway, yeah, it was fun just to look over these. And again, there's at least 20 or 30 that I didn't get to.
Now, Jonathan, do you think that these tallies of song lyrics provide some insights about what we've learned doing the show?
I think mostly the insight is Jonathan is really good at searching for lyrics that contain very specific keywords, even if he isn't very familiar with the song.
I appreciate your diligence on this front.
I mean, the fact that They Might Be Giants was used 16 times tells you that I'm an enormous They Might Be Giants fan, obviously. And also I used several of their songs more than once, like Nanobots, even some songs that aren't widely known outside of the dedicated fan base for They Might Be Giants. I think it also shows that I'm a kid of the 80s because there were an awful lot of songs that came from new wave bands, from Elton John, from Pink Floyd, 70s and 80s songs, a lot of those. And fewer – like two of the songs that Joe picked, actually the same song he picked twice, Toxic by Britney Spears. I picked that two times.
Huh. Yeah,
I color-coded artists that other people picked, which included, you know, the Beatles, Fixin' a Hole, Prince's Purple Rain, Huey Lewis in the News. Lauren quoted Hip to Be Square in an episode. I did not. I was very proud of you, though. Joe, twice you referenced Blondie. Also fantastic.
Blondie?
Yeah, Rapture and Heart of Glass. You did both. Oh, no, I did Heart of Glass. You did Rapture.
Oh, okay.
Because you did The Man from Mars Who's Eating Cars.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Lauren, you referenced one of the greatest bands of all time, Aqua, with Barbie Girl. And it wasn't for the Ooh. Hello Barbie episode, because I referenced Aqua in that one. Joe, you referenced Bobby Pickett twice.
Bobby Pickett?
Yeah, because he's the guy who wrote Monster Mash.
Oh, okay.
You referenced Tracy Chapman once, Joe. Lauren, you referenced Jamiroquai with Virtual Insanity for a VR episode.
Wow.
Joe, you referenced Madonna for Material Girl for a Material Science episode. I was so pleased with that. Lauren, you referenced CeeLo Green with Forget You once. We had a couple of other things like nursery rhymes, things like or baby songs like Rockabye Baby, stuff like that, which also On Top of Spaghetti. Joe, you were a big fan of those.
Okay.
You referenced Free Falling by Tom Petty, Joe. Steam-powered giraffes, Honeybee for the bees episode, Lauren. I did not know that I had never heard of steam-powered giraffe, and now I know it's a thing. So those are just some of the insights. Then I did pretty much everything else.
So I think what we've learned here is that in this journey we have taken together, we all have something to be ashamed of.
Yes, we all can carry that shame with us and now no longer share it with the rest of the world. At least not in this format. But we have really appreciated you guys, you listeners out there. We get your messages whenever we've had an issue with the episodes. The fact that people respond so quickly tells us that you care. So while it's frustrating to have problems, even on our side, like we don't like to see that either. But to see it would be awful to have problems and no one say anything because that means no one's listening. Right. But we have dedicated listeners who love the show. And so I really appreciate that. And of course, there are tons of people who reach out and say wonderful, positive things to us. And we appreciate you guys.
Oh, yeah. We are frequently really bad at answering those messages. And apologies. You've never been shouting into a void or saying lovely things into a void, whichever
right.
one it is. We tend to get really very quite busy with other projects around the office here. And many of those projects are going to be continuing.
Yeah, we should talk about that. So, Lauren, first let people know what other stuff you work on so that they can check that out.
Right now, what are my main projects? That's an interesting question that I haven't really thought out the answer to. I'm doing a video series and also a podcast called How Stuff Works Now, which is virtually ungoogleable, but I have faith in y'all.
Yep.
and I do writing and performance for a bunch of other How Stuff Works video kind of stuff. So watch the How Stuff Works channel. In general, and kind of be on the lookout. Hopefully sometime relatively soon, I will have a new podcast to talk to you guys about.
Yeah.
And those live things, the Facebook Live stuff. Yes.
Snack stuff and
et cetera. Usually happens either Monday around 3 p.m. Eastern or Friday around 3 p.m. Eastern.
Lauren, what is snack stuff? Is that like where you eat those cappuccino flavored potato chips?
That is exactly what happens sometimes, except we haven't had one of the cappuccino flavored ones. Yeah. Mr. Ben Bolin and I get together on Facebook Live for about 40 minutes or so. Although frequently Dylan subjects himself to whatever we have brought as well. And
sometimes
and
I do.
We bring weird snacks and we eat them and we talk a little bit about them. It's a lovely time. And we get to eat on camera, which is a dream of all of ours, to just have all of those great mouth noises and weird expressions that you make when that's occurring.
Yep.
Broadcast live to the world.
Joe, what about you?
Well, I am also one of the hosts of the podcast Stuff to Blow Your Mind, one of How Stuff Works' other podcasts with our co-workers Robert Lamb and Christian Sager. We cover primarily science, but also with a tinge of culture, history, monsters, weirdness, anything to make you squirm. And you can find us at stufftoblowyourmind.com. I also write for How Stuff Works Video. So if you keep an eye out for How Stuff Works, the How Stuff Works video channel where Lauren will be doing things, I will be doing them there as well.
Yeah. I host a show called Tech Stuff, occasionally co-host because I grab people all the time to sit in and join. And we talk about technology, how it works and how it works on us or with us. And those topics can be very technical or they can be really kind of more like on the philosophical side of things. It all depends upon the topic at the time. So you can check that episode, those episodes out. There's like 800 of them. So if you haven't listened to Tech Stuff, you've got some catching up to do. Big back catalog, including stuff that is incredibly out of date. So it's really entertaining. You can also find me hosting other videos occasionally, including How Stuff Works Now videos. I also write for How Stuff Works Now. So check that out. And you never know what else will pop up on. And as we said before, the Forward Thinking video series is going to continue. It's just the audio podcast that we're kind of pulling back from so that we can dedicate our time and work on other projects as well. And again, it's not that we don't love you. It's that we have a limited amount of time and so much we want to do. We have had a great time exploring these topics.
I want to say it's been a really excellent adventure to go on with y'all.
Aww.
Yeah. Thank both of you for being here.
And yeah, it's been a good time. You know, we really got to explore a lot of topics and look into things with a lot more depth than we could with the video series. Obviously, with the video series, they're about 3 to 4 minutes long, and we really want to hit like the big bullet points. But in the podcast, we've been able to dive into some research and learn stuff that was fascinating, mind-bending. Sometimes it was infuriating. It all depended on the topic. And we're so glad you guys came along with us on that journey. And I guess you can continue to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. I mean, I imagine that both of those I'll still be maintaining moving forward. But if you have any suggestions for future audio podcasts, okay.
Maybe be on the lookout for some videos instead.
Yeah. It's quite possible because we're now coming to a conclusion. I honestly don't know how to end this because every episode I say we'll talk to you again really soon, but I guess that's not. You know what? Go back and start at episode 1 and just work your way through. And if you do that, we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.